I'm Bobby Williams, and you are listening to Dignity, a four-part podcast docu-series about Washington State's juvenile justice system. In this show, we are digging deep to understand the changes that are happening within Washington's juvenile rehabilitation. My goal is to leave you with a deeper understanding of the work being done and the people behind this work, which includes incarcerated youth. If this is your first time listening, I encourage you to check out episode 1, Creativity Matters. This episode, we're talking about the steps being taken to create a more equitable education system for juvenile justice-involved youth. Let's get into it. This is Dignity. Chapter 2, Equity in Education. Echo Glen Children's Center in Snoqualmie, Washington is a medium/maximum security facility for youth and young adults, housing around 100 residents. That being said, it doesn't feel like your typical secure facility. It's surrounded by woods and wetlands. Walking around the campus, there's a volleyball net, a gym. I walked through a classroom with clay face masks that youth made as part of a school project. The energy in the space felt different. The vibe didn't just come from the way the place looked. It was reflected in the attitude of staff.
My name is Allison Ilgenfritz, and I am the principal of Echo Glen School.
But you always seem really upbeat whenever I'm talking with you. Why is that?
Well, I think it's just a state of mind. Every time I come to Echo, I think it's a huge choice. I'm talking about this every day I come into Echo, that I make a choice to enter as my best self, and who, if my kid was here and made a really not great choice in the community and needed to spend some time away from their community, who would I want them to interact with on a day-to-day basis? Who would I want them to trust and to take chances with and to work on themselves? And if you have somebody that's just looking at them who looks angry and upset and full of blame, like that would never encourage that time that they have to really work on themselves and to take some chances. And so I really look at this as, honestly, if this was my kid, who would I want my kid to have as a principal in a place that is away from their home, where they might be scared? You want somebody who's positive, who's going to put their best foot forward for them every single day, to model really great pro-social behaviors.
The challenges youth face when attending school at Echo Glen are different than your typical student. It seems like a tough situation. You're trying to get students to learn while they're dealing with extreme trauma.
Absolutely. So if a kid's really struggling, well, first of all the kids are really struggling when they come here. So we're fully on the struggle bus day one. And what we do is our first layer of support actually is pretty robust, and more robust than any other high school really in our state, where we have frequent check-ins for the students. We have very clear expectations posted, reviewed all over the school campus. We have the ability for students to take breaks when they need them, with trained people who know how to work through students in crisis situations. We have teachers where our highest need academic areas are integrated with special education and general education. So in our math classes, there is a special ed teacher and a general education teacher working side by side. So students have lots of differentiation in their academic needs. We have collaboration between the healthcare professionals on campus and the mental health specialists on campus and the school side. So we all work together to build programming for kids.
Principal Allison explained how there are multi-tiered systems of support in place. It seemed almost like a hybrid of education meets mental health. They recognized these youth had been through trauma, so they needed their staff to be trauma-informed. This made me think of my interview with Felice Upton, the Assistant Secretary of Juvenile Rehabilitation. What does it mean to be trauma-informed as it relates to the work in juvenile rehabilitation?
Yeah, really we think about this as doing no harm, that we should have policies and procedures that do no additional harm. Being taken from your community and being housed in a carceral setting in and of itself is inherently traumatic. But we want to make sure that we are not asking invasive questions in front of other youth. We want to make sure that with kids who may be hypervigilant due to their complex trauma they came to us with, that we're not unpredictable in our own behavior, that we are moderating our own behavior, that the adults in the space are the adults in the space, that you're not worried that any minute I might yell or hit or do some of the behaviors that I may have experienced growing up if I'm coming to you with complex trauma. And we're also looking for how do we talk about these things without othering those experiences, that having a trauma response, having post-traumatic stress disorder, having struggling with a traumatic brain injury are things that young people in our care often are dealing with, and that we need to understand what that means. We need to understand what they need from us in those moments. So yeah, it isn't a program. It isn't a single-step approach, right? It's everything that we need to make sure that we have safe enough environments where kids can learn. And I think that is the cornerstone that people forget, right? That we have a public safety mission, and part of being safe and secure is making sure that we are trauma-informed.
All these conversations made me think it would be a lot easier for teachers to just work at the high school up the road. Why were they choosing to serve incarcerated youth? Haley Lau, the program administrator who I spoke with in our last episode, had a few thoughts on this.
To work with this group of young people, and I think that they are among some of the best, the brightest, and the most creative young people, and you need to have a heart for this group of students and want to work there. I hope no teacher is there by accident. I hope that it is that they see the potential in this group of young people and that they really want to be a part of their educational journey and their transformation, just as young people, just as they're growing and changing and learning what they're really truly capable of. Because many of them, prior to coming to Echo Glen, and they didn't come to Echo Glen by choice. We all know that they got there through, you know, doing something in their community and getting sent up to JR. But this is oftentimes the first place where they've had academic success, where they've seen themselves as capable of learning, as being smart, as being intelligent. And it's awesome to see them get excited about learning.
This exact sentiment was echoed by Ron, a student from the Green Hill facility.
Most certainly, and I feel like I'm at my best when I'm learning. I feel like I'm growing the most when I'm learning, and I kind of found my inner scholar while being incarcerated, if that makes sense, while being here, so it's exciting.
Back at Echo Glen School, as I left my interview with Principal Allison, I noticed there was a library directly across from her office. It wasn't what you'd think of as a prison library. It looked like the real thing. I later learned that this library was opened just 6 months ago and was the first library for incarcerated youth in the state of Washington. As it turned out, Assistant Secretary of JR Felice Upton used to be the superintendent of Echo Glen. Felice was a big part of the push to make this library happen.
The original statement that I had reached out to partners at the Secretary of State's office with was, this is something that adult incarcerated people have access to. Why don't young people have it as well? So that they do have access to the state library system and all of the books and knowledge that comes with that. And luckily, I have the right partners there who said, oh, heck yes, we're in, and came on over and have opened a library that is Like right now, they have a series of books about identity, and they're really working with young people to read about their own identities through authors who understand and have maybe walked in similar shoes. But young people can also get curated collections that they now have access to. And really building the space to bring in poet laureates, to bring in guest speakers, to have access to all of the knowledge that would come with a public library. And we have a phenomenal librarian there who really likes to individualize reading for young people, because I think there is an age at which many young people stop reading. And if you have the access to the right book, or the librarian's able to say, like, have you thought about reading this series that may have to do with the characters you're interested in, potentially you get brought back into reading, which can open a lot of doors for all of us. And they're able to get books in other languages so that everybody has access to things that they feel represented in.
One thing, I've been to that library, and one thing that stands out to me about that and most libraries is there's just that energy of peace.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of our goals in creating that library was that if you picked it up and put it somewhere else, you wouldn't know that it was in a carceral setting. There are fluffy pillows and really colorful seating arrangements where you could sit and read a book. It looks like a real library. And we know that knowledge is power. We know that most of the young people, almost all of the young people that we house, will come back to communities. And we know that if we do rehabilitation correctly, they will desist from criminal justice involvement after some time during brain development. And so it's important for us to get the tools in front of them to be able to identify as other than somebody who's criminally involved, that we want them to say, I'm a scholar, I'm a gardener, I'm a fisherman, whatever, or woman, whatever they want to be, how do they find themselves? And often I think that is in a book.
Libraries, multi-tiered systems of support, extra staff in the classroom. This isn't just something that a school thinks of and it instantly happens. These are Washington State institutions, meaning the Washington State Legislature has to believe that it is worth all of this money and effort to make it happen. In researching this podcast, I kept coming across the same name. This woman was a huge advocate for equitable education for justice system involved youth. So I made some calls, I sent some emails, and eventually I was packing up my recording equipment to head back to the Washington State Capitol campus in Olympia.
Hi, I'm Lisa Callen, and I am a state representative for the 5th Legislative District.
Why is education so important to juvenile justice-involved youth?
For the most part, all youth that touch juvenile justice systems will, if they eventually wind up being incarcerated, will be released in their lifetime, will be released as young adults even. And in that case, their best chance, their very best chance to return to society and be productive and to thrive, to make an income, to have a family, to participate fully, is an education. If we prevent them from having an education, create barriers for them to have an education while they're involved with juvenile justice, then that sets them up for their continued path for recidivism, for actually extra barriers and burdens for them to reintegrate back into society. And that is a greater cost to society at large. It's a greater cost to the taxpayer, and, you know, foundationally and fundamentally, it's a basic right in our United States of America for an education. And if you don't have that, then your chances of success are so limited.
Representative Callen was sponsor of House Bill 1295. The spirit of this bill was that the way education was being delivered and the way that facilities operated within juvenile rehabilitation were often getting in the way of students' ability to learn. This bill directed the state's Office of Public Instruction and the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to take a look at all this and create a plan to reform the system top to bottom. Representative Callan gave her thoughts as to why mental health and juvenile rehabilitation education has been such a strong focus.
We need it both in terms of being ready to learn, but also just recognizing and identifying and being okay with who you are as an individual, right? So if you're managing your own trauma, you're trying to understand, why am I here? What is this system doing? Why am I incarcerated? What is the challenges of it? You might understand the why and be very angry about it, might be recognizing all of that, but unless it's processed and worked through, it continues that trauma level at such a level that it makes it hard to do the other things, like learn, right? To make sure every student has that chance to process through, recognize who and why they are who they are and who they want to be and what it's going to take for them in their own battles to be who they want to be.
In a sense, the way that juvenile rehabilitation is handled is a reflection of who we are as a community and what our values are as a state. A running theme through these interviews has been intrinsic worth and just the value you have as a person. Do you have any thoughts on intrinsic worth?
I think that we have to go to our systems, our education systems and our juvenile justice systems, and the way we look at that, and with this idea that every person is valued and every person has value. And there's never at a point when they don't. You have to make that decision of how you're building the systems to recognize and honor that. And so that's one of the key aspects of where we need to go with our education systems within juvenile justice and our juvenile justice systems in general, is really understand and get back to that intrinsic value of who an individual is and what it's going to take for them to thrive.
This has been Chapter 2 in our four-part podcast docu-series titled Dignity. In our next episode, we'll be continuing this theme of equity. We'll be talking about why lived experience matters, peer support, and community-based facilities that are part of juvenile rehabilitation. Again, I want to thank Smoke M2D6, who provided the music you've been hearing in the background. I'm Bobby Williams. We'll see you next episode. Peace!